Welcome to Response Leadership, brought to you by the Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service, a leader in response training. We are a podcast bringing you leadership expertise from the top minds in emergency response. I'm your host, Craig Weaver. I work in marketing and communications here at Teeks. And today our guest is Lindsay Lane, the Senior Legal Counsel at the Human Trafficking Institute in Washington, D.C. Lindsay, thanks for being with us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
What a huge topic, human trafficking. Why don't you start by telling us who you are and how you got to the Human Trafficking Institute?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm Lindsay Lane, Senior Legal Counsel at HTI. And we are a non-governmental organization that exists to decimate human trafficking at its source, and that's by addressing the trafficker. And we do that through empowering police and prosecutors and frontline personnel to identify the signs of trafficking and then to create a proper response to trafficking, whether that be from law enforcement or victim identification or looking for those identifiers or signals of a person that may be trafficked. I joined HTI about 2 years ago. Before that, as you would find out in about 2 minutes of talking to me, I was a prosecutor for several years. And I feel like I can never take that hat off. But
Do you feel like you speak a certain way?
Everyone will say, you're either law enforcement or a prosecutor. I'm like, yes.
That's funny.
Okay. I always wear that hat. But I spent the last several years serving as specifically a human trafficking prosecutor. So really working in the trenches on these cases, working with a really fantastic task force in Eastern North Carolina. And, just kind of working these cases from the moment we have identified a victim all the way through prosecution and trial. And it wasn't easy work. And so I came home one day after a really hard day. And my husband said, look, like, can't you be doing more? And I almost killed, but.
What a question.
Yeah, I know. It was a dangerous question, but he had a good intention behind it. He said, look, like, you've been doing these cases. They're really hard cases. You're trying one or two cases at a time. But what if you could be doing more? What if you could have a bigger impact? And I won't tell him, but he was correct. And so it just so happened that the position opened at HTI, where my focus now in this role is training other police, prosecutors, and frontline personnel to do what I was doing. And so really it's kind of like give a man a fish and he eats for a day, or feed a man to fish and he'll eat for a lifetime. And so now I empower others and provide that capacity to other prosecutors who are just like me to do their job and to do it with excellence. And so we do that in the United States through, really detailed, intensive training for frontline personnel, the people who are having those interactions with victims of trafficking day to day, to, again, understand how to identify a victim and then what to do. That's the most important part. Once you've identified a victim, what do you do next? And then we also do that in our country programs at HTI. We have current programs in Belize, in Uganda, and now in South Africa, where we go in and we build capacity within those law enforcement, within those prosecutors, within that country to do the good work and to do it with excellence. So I love it. I love coming to work every day. It's great to see the impact of our efforts and to work with just really great people who have a passion for this space and really, want to see that same impact that I desired as a prosecutor.
What is your role as senior legal counsel? Who are you, for lack of a better way to ask you, who are you over? Who are you a leader to?
Yeah, so I wear a lot of hats. We are a smaller organization, but I currently oversee the creation of our federal human trafficking report. So we have four attorneys who review all the federal human trafficking cases that are filed each year in all 94 districts across the United States. Okay. We extract about 300 data points from each of those cases filed, and we publish an annual report called the Federal Human Trafficking Report. So I oversee that team. Love it. I love data. Data is one of the most powerful resources we have. Numbers do not lie. And so I really enjoy that aspect of our work. I also oversee our training component. So that is where we develop very targeted training, intensive training for law enforcement, prosecutors, and first responders, again, to have to increase their impact in the anti-trafficking space. Really enjoy that. Enjoy working with people, out in the community and different agencies. And then I also oversee our fellowship and our internship program, which is wonderful. And so we have the Frederick Douglass Fellowship, which is for third year law students, for students who are really interested in the anti-trafficking or human rights space. And they want to know what that would look like to have a career. As a young college student 100 years ago, I remember having big dreams of what it would be to be a human rights attorney. And sometimes the glamour of that is not quite what it looks like in a day-to-day role. And so it's been really interesting to work with young law students, young college students, to help them kind of think about what their career will look like in the future, and then instill in them those leadership qualities to get them from where they are today to where they want to be in their dream career. So,
Well, you and I talked a little bit about core values last week. What, as far as the HCI goes, what are those core values, and how do you instill those? That's a tough thing to do, I would think. Instill those in people that are coming into this that want to learn about this.
Yeah. So I think it starts with education and just knowledge and creating that understanding of the space, but also creating an understanding of the purpose and what your purpose is on a team, in life, as a person. And really understanding how to combine your passions and your ethics into what it is that you really want to do. We have one life. And so you've got to come every day to the table ready to serve your purpose in that life. And so at HCI, I think what really sets us apart from other organizations is identifying the root of a problem. And that is our approach in the anti-trafficking space. The root of the problem is the trafficker. And we attack that, trafficking at its source. By removing the trafficker from the trafficking scheme, the trafficking scheme is dismantled. And so really helping young professionals understand a problem and learn how to diagnose and prescribe ways to get around that problem, I think is kind of where we start first. And that is one of our core values, is addressing the root of the problem, whether it be the macro problem of trafficking or the micro problem of how to get through this problem that we're facing as an organization today. And we do that through innovation, which is another one of our core values. So encouraging young students, encouraging persons within our organization to look at a problem that's super dark, that's super complex, like trafficking, and say, how can we innovatively combat this problem? How do we attack it? We do that from very data-driven approach. And something that I really enjoy of thinking ways around problems, thinking differently, doing the same thing over and over again can lead to insanity. So we want to think about how do we innovatively attack things. And we do that with excellence. And so we encourage our teammates to show up every day to do their job, to fill their purpose with excellence, and to not just do the least. I tell my kids that. Did you do the least to get that task done, or did you give it your best?
Just enough to get by, right?
Just enough to get by. That's the easy way out. Sometimes. Yeah. But to really encourage people to find their purpose, to know what it is they bring to the table, and then to show up every day with a spirit of excellence. And so I think that's something that I really enjoy about HTI also, is knowing at the end of the day, our products, our work has been done with excellence. It meets a certain standard that you can stand back and be proud of. Yeah, so I think those are all kind of some important concepts that we embrace as an organization, but we also try to instill in others.
What kind of person do you look for, or what kind of person generally shows up saying, I have a passion for this line of work?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they hear something like human trafficking, have this tremendous desire. They want to do something, but they don't know what to do.
Right.
And, it starts with that desire to be the change in a really dark situation. But really what it takes is someone who's willing to put in the hard work. If this were the kind of problem we could, tap a magic wand and make it disappear, that'd be great. Sadly, that's not how it works. Right. It takes a lot of patience and time and effort and commitment to see something through. And so I think that's something that we would look through in someone's character, is not just their desire, but really a commitment to a cause, a passion, something that goes really beyond just an interest, but a deep commitment and a passion to see change in an area, and knowing that sometimes that's going to require a lot of hard work. Whether that means you're holding the reins and you're leading, or maybe it means you're the person who's coming in behind to give that support, maybe not in a front role. So I think that's something we would look for, is someone who really has a commitment to the space beyond just, an interest.
What does trafficking look like in America? And I know there are some misconceptions about it. I probably have a bunch, but what's the how would you describe what trafficking looks like? I'm sure it has a lot of different faces to it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I like to ask people, if you close your eyes and I said the word human trafficking, what image pops in your mind? And almost always the response I get is a woman being kidnapped, cages, ropes, chains. Yeah. A lot of time we hear some of the most popular movies of someone being kidnapped and taken to a foreign country and exploited or sold into the sex industry. And while some of those things might be a little bit true, the reality is trafficking is a crime that happens in plain sight. And a lot of times we just miss it. Traffickers often know their victims. Victims are very, very rarely kidnapped. Most often victims of trafficking are recruited, and they're recruited by a trafficker, meaning they are they're lured into the exploitation.
Okay.
What we have found in our review of data of cases that have been prosecuted in the federal court systems across the U.S. are that a lot of people are met, they meet their traffickers online. And so it starts with a casual conversation on some of our most common apps, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Snapchat.
Yeah.
They meet a recruiter or they meet a trafficker. The trafficker tells them everything that they need and want to hear. They start a relationship, and then over time that person ends up being exploited. We see that a lot among young children, especially young girls who meet someone online. The trafficker who they're having communication with may say that they are an underage teenage boy, but in fact, they're actually a much older person or an older male who is actually grooming them to exploit them later. So people often ask, like, you know, are my children going to be kidnapped and human trafficked from the mall? That's not likely. What's more likely is that a child is very likely to be introduced to their trafficker online, recruited online. They're much more at risk of danger behind a closed door in their bedroom with access to social media and a cell phone than they are probably in public.
Wow. I know that you have a relationship between law enforcement in terms of training. What is the relationship like between your organization and law enforcement on, like, a more local level, state level, whatever that looks like? What do you tell them? How do you train those people?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it all goes back to data. What does data show us? We have found that victims of human trafficking very rarely self-identify. In my time as a prosecutor, out of the dozens of victims I work with, none of them came running out saying, "Help me, I'm a victim of human trafficking."
Wow.
In fact, even when they had interaction with law enforcement, they very rarely identify as a victim of trafficking. And so what
we have found— Why do you think that is? Is it fear? What are the reasons for that?
Yeah, that's, you know, what survivors have told me is that I never realized I was being exploited. Right. I thought I was just in a bad spot. I got into something over my head. You know, I had a drug addiction. I got into a situation. I'm the person who caused it, and I just couldn't get out of the situation. And it took an intervention of a law enforcement officer or service provider to come in and say, "Hey, do you realize what he's doing to you is not love? This is, you know, let's get you out of that situation, help you process that." And so what we have found is that when we empower those frontline workers to be proactive, when they're on scene at a hotel, when they're on scene at a hospital, they're looking for those identifiers. And when they have the correct conversations with survivors or with victims who are in the exploitation, we see that change. We see the needle move in getting that victim into a position where they can receive the help and the services that they need. And again, we can get to the root of the problem, prosecuting that trafficker. And so that's what we focus on, is we focus on empowering, you know, this frontline personnel with the education and the knowledge they need to make those identifications. And then what to do next, having those policies and protocols in place to know how to get that victim that they have now identified into the proper care that they need, and to see that case through to prosecution so that that trafficker is held accountable. So you know, we do that again from a data-driven approach. It looks different region by region. Certain law enforcement in certain areas may look very different than law enforcement in a more metropolitan area. But we look at the types of trafficking that are taking place, and then we go in and train, and we build that capacity within that organization such that they become sustainable in their investigations and prosecutions.
Do you see a lot more people, traffickers, being prosecuted? Is that happening a lot more?
Ideally, that would be the outcome, is that the sooner we can identify a victim, the sooner that we can make that information available to law enforcement and they can begin a quality investigation in conversation with their prosecutors, we will see more successful outcomes in the prosecution of those traffickers.
Okay. You had mentioned to me last week when we spoke that human trafficking looks slightly different and then not that different in terms of Uganda or New York mm-hmm. or Dallas or wherever. Do you do the same training? Does the training remain consistent wherever you are in terms of data?
That's a really good question. You know, our model remains the same of training police and prosecutors for that purpose of creating that capacity within them. And trafficking at its core is a financially motivated crime. You know, what motivates a trafficker? It's money. And money, that's the same in the United States as it would be in Africa, as it would be in Central America. It's a financially driven crime. And so having that in mind and thinking, well, how do we combat that looks the exact same. When it comes to sexual exploitation, it looks very similar across the globe, where you have someone who is exploiting vulnerabilities within someone else with the purpose of them engaging in commercial sex, and they're benefiting from it financially. There's also a unique side to human trafficking outside of what we would typically see in the United States. Cultures are very different. You know, in Uganda, our team there faces cases that involve child sex trafficking for purposes of marriage, trafficking for human sacrifice, trafficking for child soldiers. You know, those are types of scenarios that look very different abroad.
Yeah, than the States.
Than the States. Yeah, sure. Exactly. But the training component is the same of just educating those law enforcement as to what to look for and then what to do next.
Do you travel quite a bit in what you do? You do.
And it's something I enjoy. I think it gives you a tremendous appreciation for what we have here, the structures that we have in place, the access to justice, I think, that we have in the United States. It also is very rewarding to see other countries who are so passionate about solving this problem, and knowing that we have the ability to help build that capacity within their own countries. Fantastic. Yeah.
It would seem like the kind of work you do, it would almost be impossible for you not to go see what's happening. It'd be tough to do from this many thousand miles away. But
yeah,
what would you say is the most difficult part about being in leadership in terms of anti-trafficking?
Yeah, this is a tough job. It's a dark space sometimes. Sure. And it's really difficult to maintain boundaries of work has to stop and person has to begin. You know, to be fully present and to have that same, you know, characteristic of excellence as a mom, as a spouse, as a person, as a friend. And then also to know when to turn those switches on and off in a professional capacity. I think setting those boundaries and exemplifying those to the persons that we lead is very important. It's easy to tell others how to exhibit self-care or how to, you know, set those limits. But if we're not setting those same examples in our own lives, actions speak louder than words. And so I think that's really difficult sometimes when you're working in this area where, you know, the work you do does mean something. You know, every minute that you're investing can protect a survivor, protect a victim of trafficking, but to know that there also has to be limitations where we stop and we, you know, we focus on ourselves for a minute too. So
how do you do that? I mean, like you said, it's easy to give very healthy advice to people about you need to decompress, you need to do this. How do you do it personally? How do you display that?
You know, it's for me the past year of really focused on setting hard boundaries of I will be present at dinner time. My phone is turned off. My laptop is closed. Yep. I will make football practice as many times as possible this year. Limiting travel. And that's really tough when people, you know, they need you and they need things of you, or, you know, you think, wow, if I can get this one agency trained, think of the impact that we can have, but it's going to take me missing a Thanksgiving program for my kids. Those are all things that we have to weigh. But really setting those boundaries and then also being really efficient and being a good steward of time. I think that's really important too, of finding a system that works well for you. For me personally, it's been learning how to delegate tasks, how to automate tasks, and how to just set aside time for deep work and know when things have to be done, shutting everything off to get those things across the finish line. And then, you know, on our teammates, encouraging them to do the same. What works for me may not work for you or for other people, but encouraging them to set those own you know, structures in place for themselves is really important.
Is it difficult for you personally to delegate?
It absolutely is difficult. How did you know?
Well, yeah, I think that it is for me too, and it's a weakness. I thought it'd be interesting to ask you, if you find it difficult to delegate, and how do you know what to delegate? Is that something you had to learn and practice, or?
Yeah. I think delegation is really a key characteristic of a strong leader, and it's not easy to achieve. Yeah. A couple years ago, I read a book called Procrastination on Purpose, and that was a game changer for me. It really talked about when you have a task and you have the ability to empower someone else or train someone else to do that task, take the time to train them to do that task, because in the end, it's going to pay off. It might be more of an investment for you on the front end, but later on, you know, it's going to benefit everyone. So,
yeah. What advice would you give to somebody that wants to get into this line of work?
Geez, let's see. What would I tell someone who's interested in working in the anti-trafficking space?
Yeah.
One is educate yourself. And I like to tell everyone this. I want you to do your research before you click share on anything you see on social media. It might sound really interesting, fascinating, but you really need to do your research. And so, you know, in my time working as a prosecutor, in my time at HTI, what I found was a lot of people have a tremendous desire to work in the anti-trafficking space, but they don't really have an understanding of it. And when you don't understand, sometimes you can do more harm than help. This is a really rare area where doing the wrong thing can be worse than doing nothing at all. Okay. And I'll give a perfect example. You know, a lot of times people feel like it'd be really helpful to just go into a situation and remove a survivor from trafficking without really understanding the levels of control that traffickers can have over survivors. We don't have time to go through trauma bonding today, but you know, where a trafficker has such control over a victim that they don't, you know, they still have this tremendous feeling of, you know, of wanting to still be with the trafficker while knowing that they're being exploited. It's a very unique area of the space. But if you go in and you remove a victim, you know, from that situation, you may end up causing them more harm. You're putting them at risk of danger.
Right.
You know, the trafficker could come back and have, you know, take that out on them later. And so if you really want to be interested in the space, I think it would be important to just have an education and understanding of what human trafficking looks like, specifically in the United States. Understanding that victims don't often leave, you know, the trafficking situation without someone there to support them in that. And then learning what skill set you have, how could you bring that to the table, whether that be you know, working directly with survivors, or, you know, working in a policy space, or working in, you know, legal support for survivors or housing. There's so many different areas you could be involved, but it really takes you understanding the space and knowing what skill set you can bring to the table. People, you know, they want to go and be like, well, let me see what a survivor of trafficking looks like. Let me go into a home. And like, that's not the work we do is completely behind the scenes. There is no like, here's a survivor. Let's let her tell her story. You know, a lot of the work we do goes completely unknown.
Yeah.
But we're all okay with that because we know what we're doing is making a difference.
I can imagine this type of work. It takes a lot of patience to do things well and to see things through. Is it difficult for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's especially, I think my personality is I like to see something through to fruition, like to see it completed. And I learned my lessons very early on in working with survivors that it's my job to meet them where they are. Mm. When they are ready, then I'm going to be standing there ready to help and to prosecute that trafficker and make sure that what he has done to them, he'll never do to anyone else, or she will never do to anyone else. And that's a tremendous level of patience. Especially as a person who, you know, it's just natural for us to have that sense of competition, to want the bad guy to be held accountable.
Sure.
But to know justice, that takes time. Yeah. Justice can look very different for different people. And sometimes that might mean that a trafficker's made whole in a different way. And that trafficker's not prosecuted in that case. But that was very difficult. And it's something I still have to take into consideration that, you know, survivors are each in a very different spot. And we have to do our very best to, you know, provide for them to have law enforcement prosecutors ready to tackle the case, you know, when that time comes.
What's the most rewarding part of what you do, of what you've done?
Gosh, watching that little seed that you planted years ago, you know, grow. Just even getting phone calls from a survivor that I worked with years ago. He said, "Hey, do you remember me? I wasn't ready then, but I am now. And I just wanted to say thank you." That makes it worthwhile.
Sure.
There's also tremendous satisfaction in seeing the justice system work, to work exactly as it's supposed to, to see a victim be made whole through, you know, the prosecution of the trafficker, the implementation of restitution, you know, to make them whole, to see them receive the services that they need in a well-working system. It doesn't always happen that way. But that gives you the satisfaction of knowing that the time and the patience and investment that you put in, you know, finally paid off.
Yeah.
I would just want people to know, if this is a space that you are interested in and you are a frontline personnel, you are someone who might be encountering potential victims of trafficking in day to day, you know, become educated, become aware. Okay. And if HDI can help you do that, please let us know. If your agency is in need of training to better understand this crime, to know what to look for, and then to set in protocols in place as to what to do if a victim's identified, we'd be more than happy to help, you know, create that education so that you can have standards of excellence, you know, in what you bring to the table for the anti-trafficking space.
Thank you so much for doing this with us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And let me share about something I'm incredibly passionate about.
Thank you for listening to Response Leadership, brought to you by the Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave a review and follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit us at teeks.org/podcasts. New episodes are released on the fourth Tuesday of every month.